Okay? So the first thing that we're going to ask, and we're going to put in our chart. So here's a chart I start off. We're going to ask where. Where is this going on? Because the writers of Scripture often use location to break the story. They'll start in one location, it goes to another location, new story. Often the case in Scripture. It's the way that you can encase the story. It's sort of like when you watch Star Wars. You know, with the big swipe on the screen. I don't know how many of you guys watch Star Wars. But at first, it's on Tatooine, the desert planet. And you have a little bit of the story there, of Luke there. And then, it wipes, and now we're in space. And you see in space, there's Princess Leia, and things are going on there. And then, another swipe, and we're back on Tatooine. That's, the location is integral to telling us what's going on. And it's helpful for us to remember that. So, we start off with where. So that's what I put in my first bucket. The first bucket of information. So look at the text. It says, we're skipping time for now. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee. All right. So we have where. There's a wedding. So it's at a wedding, right? That's the where. And it's in Cana, right? But then John also adds an important detail. What does he say there? Cana where?
Of Galilee.
Of Galilee. Why is that important?
That's a larger area.
It's a larger area. Why would John tell us of Galilee?
There might be more.
Exactly. There might be more. There might be another Cana. So John is pinpointing where it is. Is that important to John's writing? Maybe. He decided to mention it, but we will include it.
That's
Galilee.
Like, that's like Bethlehem, Ephrathah.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's even like saying, for example, when we say York in Pennsylvania,
yeah.
You're not talking about the York in England. You're talking about the York in Pennsylvania. So there's something there. So John decides to tell us it's at a wedding. It's at Cana of Galilee. So that's the location. Now let's go look at the when. When is also important. When you study your scripture and you look at, for example, Luke. Luke does a real good job with when. He starts telling you exactly who was in charge, who was the king, who was the ruler, who was in that time and place. He does that. That's what he does. John does something a little bit different throughout the book of John. Here he tells us, though, on the third day. Now, we touched on this last week, right? We said this could be maybe it's the third day of the week. Maybe it's the third day after chapter 1. So look at chapter 1 where it says, it starts off in verse 19 with John giving witness, chapter 1, that John was bearing testimony when the Jews sent to him. And then it says down below, it says in verse 35, again the next day, John was standing with two of his disciples. Then verse 43, the next day he proposed to go to Galilee. And then we see on the third day, so maybe it's the third day after those things. It could be the third day of traveling. We don't know, but it says on the third day. Now here you guys are going to get involved. Let's workshop this. Who? Who is this miracle? Who is in this story? Who are the people? So let's work this out. Starting in verse 1. Who are the people?
Jesus. The mother of Jesus.
The mother of Jesus. That's what it says in verse 1, right? The mother of Jesus. All right. As I put that down, mother of Jesus, what doesn't it say?
Doesn't give her first name.
Doesn't give her first name. Is that weird? Why would he write mother of Jesus instead of writing Mary?
Mother Mary's.
There's a lot of Marys. Why not even say Mary, the mother of Jesus? So there's a question I have that I put down. I put down a question for myself, and I go, why this? But I'm not answering that question yet. You see, with guys, this is the thing with guys. When we come up with an answer, the second we start saying that this is what it is, we commit to that answer, it's very hard for guys to back away from that answer. So it's very hard. I learned that very strongly in my 20s, and I still learn it, that I would preach hard in my 20s from this is what the text says. And then a week later, I find out that's not what it says. And my ears turn red. I'm like, oh, man, how do I back off from that? Ooh, it's very hard. And it's very hard. And I, ooh, boy, that's very hard. That's why I like Eric Broadbent's style. Eric Broadbent. Have you noticed Eric Broadbent when he preaches here? He always says, well, here's what this could mean. Some people say what this might mean this. And then he says, if you have some perspective or some insight, let me know. And he says that. And he has no problem being wrong with the text. No problem with it. He is strongly behind what the text strongly says. Jesus Christ is Lord. On the third day he resurrected from the grave. He will not back down. But then the other stuff, he's willing to let the text teach him. Always. That impresses me. And I sat there, I was talking to Preston one day. I'm like, man, I'll preach fire. But I will be preaching fire and I could be wrong out of my mind. Eric will preach softly, and he's never outright wrong because he's still waiting for more evidence to come in. That's an awesome way to approach a text. Anyway, so come on, give me some more. Who else is there? Somebody said Jesus, right?
Disciples.
Jesus. All right, where are we seeing his disciples? It says it in?
Verse 1.
Verse 1. So all in the beginning, we're getting all this information. His disciples. All right. Now, do we see anybody else yet? Remember, we're going in order. We're in verse 3. Well, we're in verse 2. And both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding.
Can it be assumed from the first three texts that there are two people being married who are currently there?
It could be assumed, but what's in the text? That's the thing. We want to avoid assumptions and see what's in the text. So far, at verse 2, we don't see anything else, right? So what I do, I stop my who bucket. I don't fill it up because I know there's more coming. I know there's more coming, right? So I stop my bucket there. This is sort of like, have you guys ever taken apart electronics or like anything with moving parts? Have you ever taken apart? And my father used to do this. He would change the brakes on our old Mercedes-Benz, right, that he let me use in college. And he'll come into the house with a bag, and he'll put it on the counter. All this rattling of metal. And I'm like, what's that? And he goes, extra parts. And he walks away. I'm like, what? They don't come with extra parts. Well, the thing is, he was tricking me because he would pull off the old parts, and he'll put in the new parts, and he'll have shiny brake calipers put in and all that stuff. So that he was tricking me. But he has a method to what he would do. Years ago, he took apart a diesel engine. And he tells me that you put it in its own sections. So you have section 1, the first things you remove. Section 2, the second thing you remove. I did the same thing with an iPod. I put like little, almost a grid on my table. And I pulled out the first screw. And I put it there. My second screws, I put it there. That's what we're doing with this text. Vacuum, same thing. You take the parts and you put them on in order so you can put it back together again. What we're doing with this chart, we're trying to figure out what the text says, and we're seeing so what we could put it back together again. Even though we're actually wind up putting it out of order, we're seeing what happens in order and then putting it into these buckets. So let's go into the next bucket then. All right, it says, verse 3, when the wine ran out. All right, so here what I do, instead of what, because there's a lot of what's, this is all about what, I say what was the problem. So the problem, right? You could come up with a different phrase. I mean, whatever. This is the thing that's the middle ground of what Jesus is about to do. I mean, John's telling a story, so he's giving you the setting, he's giving you the people, he's giving you the problem, he's going to give you a solution, and he's giving you the climax. All right, so what's the problem? So what's the problem here? What are we seeing? Verse 3.
Ran out of wine. Wine is gone.
When the wine ran out, right?
El Puch.
So the wine ran out. And what was the second part of the problem? Here, the mother of Jesus says to him, they have no wine. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does that have to do with us? My hour has not yet come." So what's the other part of this problem here?
It's not Jesus' hour.
Not Jesus' hour.
Why it's not an hour?
Yeah, exactly. What does that mean?
That's not true.
What does that mean? Now, what we automatically start to interpret, that means when Jesus goes to the cross. Or, oh no, that means that when he gets resurrected. Shh, 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 shh. That's interpretation. We're not dealing with that. We're not trying to figure out what it means. We just want to see what it says. So leave it as a question. And you know what I find that it's very helpful? Even if you studied this already, it's helpful to put all that aside and come at it again. I don't know if this is true. I don't know if this is true. I've heard it. The tenth man. Have you ever heard that? The tenth man? They say. This is. I don't know if this is true, but I've seen it in movies. That Israel, right, has this group of people in the Knesset, right? That there's after the Six-Day War. And it's good. I'm telling you, this could be completely fake. It most likely is. That you have 10 people. And the purpose of the 10th person was to disagree with everybody else. Because before, when they were going to be attacked, everybody thought, nah, nobody's going to attack us. And then they were attacked. And they were almost wiped out if they didn't react quickly. But they saw they needed a 10th man. So if all 9 people on the chamber decide, this is what it says, the 10th person says, what if we're wrong? So what I tend to do when I'm studying this stuff, I move aside a lot of my conclusions on what I've decided, and I go, all right, what is it saying? Does it mean what I thought it says? Yes?
Plurality of leadership.
Plurality of leadership, exactly. Exactly. When you have one pope, it's very easy to be infallible. You can be perfect with your decisions. When you have 3 people who are deciding, you can real easily be overruled. Or the third one could say, no, we got to stop. You two are wrong. Pretty interesting, all right? All right, so let's keep going. So the problem is that's not Jesus' hour, but what else does it say there? What else does it say there? Woman, what does this have to do with us? I'm putting dot, dot, dot to say the rest of it. What does it have to do with us? Yeah, how does this concern us? Same thing. So what? That's a problem, isn't it? Because it sounds like Jesus is saying, this has nothing to do with me. What's the point of this? So there's some serious problems here. Okay. Now, what is now the means? That's how it happens, how the miracle happens. So what's the stuff that happens to make this miracle take place? All right, so what's the means? For example, verse 5, his mother said to the servants, stop. You see that word servants there? Who else was at the wedding?
Servants.
Servants. So we write down servants in our who bucket.
Are there her servants then?
We don't know about that. It says, she tells the servants, whatever he says to you, do it. So there, we know at the wedding, there's servants. So we put that in our who bucket. But we're still looking at our means, right, of how this happened. She says, whatever he says to you, do it. So obviously, one of the means is Jesus, right? He's the one who's doing this. He says, whatever he says, do it. All right, what is another one of the means? Could we give me verse 6? What do we see there? What does it say there?
Stone jars.
Stone jars. How does it describe these jars?
Water for purifying.
For purifying. For purifying. So, does it tell us what this water is we're doing? It tells us there's a Jewish custom of purification. But it doesn't really tell you what that custom was, right? It tells you it's for purifying. For all we know, it could be for brushing your teeth, purifying. For washing your hands, purifying.
Washing chickens off.
Washing your chickens off. Well, that's all we know, right? So we have a question here on how to, we need to follow up on that too, right? We need to find out something about the culture or something like that. But right now, we're just looking at what it says. And it says there that there were some water pots for purification. They contained 20 or 30 gallons each. So Jesus says to them, fill the water pots with water. So what else the means here? Filling with water, right? Somebody else tell me how far they filled up these water pots.
To the top,
right?
To the brim. That's the tippy top.
All right, to there. Now, it says, verse 8. What do we see there? What's the other means?
Draw them out. A ladle?
Yes.
And to the master of the feast, so that means the master of the feast is there. Another food.
Yes. And send to the master of the feast.
Did that include the groom?
Nope.
Nope.
Master of feast. So when you have a master of the feast, you have somebody who's doing something with the feast. But that's a good question. Is this the groom? You ask the question. Maybe the text is going to answer it. So we see. Let's find out if the text tells us if this is the groom or somebody else. Because he's just telling us that it's the person in charge of the feast. It could be the groom for all we know. But maybe it's not. So let's keep looking. So Jesus tells them to draw some out and take it to the master of the feast. Mine says the head waiter. So they took it to him. They took it to him, right? All right. Look at verse 9. When the head waiter tasted, or when the master of the feast tasted the water, what does your verse say?
The master of the feast that tasted the water that was made wine.
The water that was made wine. What does everybody else have?
Turned into wine.
The water that was turned into wine. So here, I put the sign. Right? Here's the sign. Water to wine. Now, did we see the miracle? Did you see the water change to wine? Was there any point in the text that says, and the water turned into wine? You don't see it, right? All we see is the servants taking it to the master of the feast, and the master of the feast, it says, and when he tasted the water that had become wine. And it says, he didn't know where it came from. So now we start seeing results. Results. He didn't know where it came from. And what else does it go proceed to say there?
Called the bridegroom.
He called the bridegroom. So, we have another who? Bridegroom. If he called the bridegroom, is the master of the feast the bridegroom? No, it's a different person. So now we know, this is something else. So we have part of a question answered. This is something else. Somebody who's in charge of the feast. We also find something else about him. So he calls the bridegroom, and he says to him, every man serves the good wine first. And when people, or the guests, have drunk freely, then he serves the poorer wine. But you have kept the good wine until now. So he says, you saved the best for last, basically. best wine for last. That's what he winds up saying. He's speaking this to the bridegroom, right? And then it tells us in verse 11, this beginning of his signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory. What does your version say? Does it say a similar thing, King James?
Revealed
his glory. So I put here, as a result, the manifested or revealed glory. His glory. Now, I like to add one more bucket. I like to add a faith bucket. Or belief bucket. Because if the purpose that John wrote this was so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing in him, you have eternal life in his name. Isn't it kind of important then to see how this sign ties with belief? I would say so. So I include that. So what it says here in the verse, it says that this beginning of his signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory and his disciples believed in him. So I put that down. His disciples believed.
Is that a result?
I put that as a result, but I make it its own bucket personally. Okay. You can't put it as a result. I break it out because I want to be able to look at this text and say, all right, John wants me to know that this sign ties to belief, that you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. So I want to see all of this text easily. I want to see a picture and see, all right, this is what it says. So the thing is, there's a lot in that text. There's a lot going on. But with a chart, I was able to now easily organize my information. So where does this happen? Cana of Galilee, at a wedding. When is this? On the third day. From what? Who was there? Oh, mother of Jesus, Jesus, his disciples, the servants, the head waiter, the bridegroom. Oh, what was the problem? The wine ran out. And also, it wasn't Jesus' hour. I don't know what that means. And also, it's Jesus was saying, what does this have to do with him? And yet, he did it anyway. He went. He used the means of the stone jars. He made the servants do the work. He just told them what to do. He wasn't doing anything but telling them what to do. We never see the miracle. We never see a point where it says, and the water became wine. All we see is that the water had become wine. And then we see the head waiter saying, you saved the best wine for last. And then it says, John says, oh, he manifested his glory and the disciples believed. Now, you should be able to asking a question here then. Disciples believe? Is it possible for disciples not to believe? Did they not believe at this point? That's a head scratcher. Especially when you get to John chapter 6. You know what happens in John chapter 6? That's the feeding of the 5,000. And it says in John chapter 6 that afterwards, after the miracle, after the sign, there was this huge crowd of people that came looking for him. And they were coming for food. And Jesus tells them eventually, you need to eat my flesh and my blood. Oh, it means the mass. No. Look at what the text says. You need to eat my flesh and my blood. And then it says, because they heard this, they said, this is a hard saying. And it says, and many of the disciples stopped walking with him. Is it possible to be a disciple who does not believe? And then he turns to the 12 and says, will you leave as well? Interesting. Is it possible? Yes.
I think it might be the difference between just having been there with him and like calling yourself his disciple versus actually believing in him as the Son of God and being his disciple. I'm sure there was a big crowd of people who said, oh, we're disciples of this man, but they didn't really know who he really was.
Oh, it's very possible. We'll have to look at the text to see, right? Because it's real easy to jump and say, this is what it is. But John wants us to know this. And he wants us to see that the disciples believed because of this. That's interesting. They were following him, but now They started to believe. They believed. All right, so at this point, I want to stop there. Actually, you know what? I don't want to stop there. Because what I would do then, I would look at this text, right? And I get to now verse 12. After this, he went down to Capernaum. He and his mother and his brothers and his disciples. And they stayed there a few days. Does anything happen there? Doesn't seem to happen there, right? And then verse 13, it says, the Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Sounds like a new story now, right? So at that point, I say, okay, I am satisfied with my research. I've documented the first sign. I'm going to have to do another chart, possibly, for what happens next, for what happens in the next story, the next scene. But for now, I'm satisfied that I got this information down. Just getting the what's down. So that means that you can go then and start doing verse 13 to 23 and seeing, is this a complete unit? Does it keep going? And so forth. All right. So did anybody do any sort of homework sort of deal? Looking at the signs? It was a lot of stuff to look at if you try to do that. So I'm assigning some real homework for next week. Some real homework. Chapter 6. We can actually look at that right now because we have a few minutes. If you, any of you have already studied chapter 6. Chapter 6 has the feeding of the 5,000. It has Jesus walking on water. And it has a very long conversation. A very long conversation that occurs. Why are these two miracles next to each other? Jesus feeding the 5,000, Jesus walking on water. Are they simply next to each other because they just happened like that in time? If John says that the writing of these signs is so that people may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing in him, you have life in his name, how are those miracles teaching us a lesson in belief, in believing? What does it say there? So the homework, study your John chapter 6. If you can, do your own version of a chart for the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 and the miracle of the walking on water. And then, if you have time, look at the discussion that occurs afterwards to see if that clues you in onto what could possibly be the connection between John's recording of the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 and the walking on water. This is a very hard section. Be prepared to sweat.